Okay, you are tuned to K88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob. Today is a special show because I'm doing an interview today with a member of a group from St. Louis called the Earls Incorporated that had a bunch of excellent records. So you will be hearing their story and listening to their record, so it should be good. So the person I'm talking to, his name is Bobby Buchanan. Bobby, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, you're on the air. So first of all, thanks so much for being here on the phone and telling your story. So first of all, where are you from originally?
Well, I was born in Mississippi, but I've been in St. Louis since I was like four.
Okay. And when did you start singing?
Oh, well, I guess when I was like maybe 13 or 14, because I was brought up in the doo-wop area. When the Spaniels, the Drifters, you know, and the Dales and groups like that come about, and we used to stand on corners and just doo-wop, you know.
So was there a big scene like that in St. Louis, a lot of people singing?
Yes. That's what everybody did during that time. I mean, after school, we would all just hang out and stand on the corner and just doo-wop.
So you pretty much got started when you were in high school singing harmony?
Yes.
Did you have a group in high school?
I beg your pardon?
Did you have a group in high school?
No, I sang in the Glee Club in high school. And shortly afterwards, a friend of mine, he wanted to form a group, so we put a little four-part harmony group together for a little while. And eventually, I guess after about a year or so, I had a friend that was singing professionally, and they needed a male vocalist. And I left the little group and started singing professionally. I think I was about 17.
And that was all while you were still in high school?
Yes.
What was the name of the first group you were singing with the four-part harmony?
The Wanderers.
The Wanderers?
Yes.
And what part did you sing?
I did second tenor.
Okay. And were there other groups in your high school that you, like, competed against? Like, how did it work? Did you do shows?
Yeah. Yes, it was the Veil Rays. I'm trying to think of the name of the other group. It was the Veil Rays and I can't think of the name of the other group. The Alpines. The Veil Rays and the Alpines.
Alpines, yeah.
Yes.
I think I interviewed one other person in a St. Louis group called the Salvadors. I think he mentioned the Alpines.
Yes.
So were there a lot of high schools and each high school had their own set of groups in St. Louis?
Yes, they did.
What was the name of your school?
Soul Dan.
What was it, I'm sorry?
Soul Dan.
Okay. And you said that you started singing professionally at age 17?
Yes.
How did that happen?
I had this friend that was, at the time, she was working with a group called Chuck Tillman's Combo. And Ike Turner had been trying to get her into his band, but she chose to stay with Chuck, and they needed a male vocalist. And she approached me and asked me if I wanted to sing, and I said yes.
Okay. And Chuck Tillman, was he based in St. Louis?
Yes.
Yeah, because I've seen some of his records. It was like a jazz combo?
Yes.
So did you leave school to sing professionally with them?
Yes, I did.
So did you tour a lot of places or play mainly in St. Louis?
Well, we was on the college circuit at the time.
So what types of places did you play?
Mostly colleges and stuff like that.
Around St. Louis or all over the Midwest? Like what areas?
All over the Midwest.
And what were the shows like? Like what types of stuff did you sing?
Mostly R&B and jazz.
Okay. And was that like the early 60s?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so how long did you stay with Chuck Tillman's Combo?
About 3 years.
Okay. And did you ever record anything with them? Because I know they did record.
No, I didn't record anything with them.
Okay, and then did they break up, or why did you leave the group?
Well, Chuck had family problems with his wife, and he had to, you know, stop playing, and the group, you know, kind of broke up after that.
So did you try to sing with other groups after that happened?
No, all I did, I had a friend that played keyboards, and I used to go to his house every day, and I would rehearse, trying to keep my voice together and whatnot, just in case. And I ended up working for Chrysler, and I met Joe Williams, which I was singing one day, and he heard me, and asked me if I wanted to be a part of a group, and I said yes. And after that, me and him got together, and we met one weekend. And we started interviewing other people, and that's how we came with the group at Earl.
So did Joe ever sing in any other groups before you sang with him?
Not to my knowledge.
So what year did you end up forming the Earls around?
1964.
Okay. And who were the members of the group besides you, Bobby Buchanan, and Joe Williams?
Bobby Chambers, Ambro Harris, and Alvin Young.
And how did you meet the other three guys?
I knew Bobby. Well, Joe knew Ambro and Alvin Young. He was with, well, I was with us from the very beginning. It was the three of us. Then we met Ambro, and we needed another person. I heard Bobby Chambers singing in another group, and I asked him if he wanted to lead that group and sing, perform with us. He said yes. So that's how that happened.
Do you remember what group he was singing with?
No, I don't.
Okay. So you got everybody together. Let me play your first record, and then we could talk about what led up to this recording. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, so this is your very first record that the Earls released, and this track is called Tilly, and we'll be back with more of the story of the Earls.
Okay.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show. That was just the Earls out of St. Louis with their very first recording called Tilly. And if you're just tuning in, I have a singer named Bobby Buchanan, who was a member of the Earls, and he is telling his story. So, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, do you remember what year that the song came out around?
That might have been the beginning of 65.
Okay. So you weren't together that long before you had recorded?
Yes.
Only about a year?
Yes.
So when you got together originally, did you start doing shows or did you just practice singing together? What did you do?
Well, we mostly rehearsed because we wanted to be, well, we wanted to be as good as, you know, we could be. And so we mostly, we did like little talent shows and whatnot.
And you were all like in your 20s then?
Yes. I was like maybe, I was 21 or 22.
So what were the talent shows like? Were they like at different venues in the city the talent shows happened? Like what kind of talent shows were there?
Well, mostly like a lot of disc jockeys here used to have the talent shows and whatnot for the talent that was here. And we would compete against each other, you know, see who were the best.
So they'd just be like events that disc jockeys put on?
Yes.
And what types of places would they be at? Was there like a big club that a lot of things happened at? Or like what was it like in St. Louis?
Well, sometimes it would be like at community centers. Or every now and then it would be something like maybe what place they call a Kiel Auditorium. They would have them there. You know, different places, like different halls and stuff like that, the Masonic Hall. And everybody would get together and perform.
And do you remember some of the groups you competed against?
It would be like the Montclairs, the Caesars, the Belairs. That's about all I can think of. And maybe the Voice Masters.
Okay.
That's about all I can remember right offhand.
You were telling me earlier also Bull and the Matadors were from St. Louis?
Yeah, they was around also.
So you all would compete against each other in talent shows?
Yes.
Were there any female groups competing?
No.
Okay, mostly male groups?
Mostly all male.
So on that record, Tilly, first of all, who sings lead on that record?
Alvin Young.
And what part is everyone else singing? Like who's
Joe
bass?
William was bass and baritone. I was second tenor. And now Joe was bass, and I was second tenor. Ambrose was first tenor, and Bobby Chang, he was doing baritone.
And how did you end up recording a record? Like most people would try to like audition for a record label, but you didn't do that, right?
No. I knew this guy, he was a minister, and I used to go over his house. After I stopped singing with Chuck Tilly Combo, I used to go to his house every day. He was a keyboard, he played keyboard, and he was a songwriter. I used to go to his house and rehearse all the time, and once I got in the group, I told him about the group. He was a minister, and he knew another minister that had a recording studio in the church. So we ended up over there, and that's how we ended up recording Tilly.
So it was actually recorded in a church?
Yes.
And so the record was on a label called TT. What's that label?
That was at the time McClure, Mr. McClure. He that was his label, and he put it on his label, and that's how we ended up on that label because that was his label at the time. And he wanted to record the group once he heard them, and I introduced him to him, and he heard them, so he wanted to record the group, and he put us on his label.
Okay, and do you remember who wrote the song, Tilly?
We all come up with it at the time. We didn't have any songs when he took us to the studio.
Okay.
Once we got there, that's when we come up with it, once we got to the studio.
So you wrote it right there?
Yes.
So the whole group wrote it together pretty much?
Yes.
And so you said you were on his label. Did you, like, sign a contract with him?
Yes.
Okay. So, did that record get any play in St. Louis?
Yeah, it got a little play here.
Did it get any play anywhere else?
No.
Probably because it wasn't distributed, is that right? Was it distributed?
True. Yeah, that was the problem.
And I know it's very hard to get, like, your own independent thing distributed.
True.
If you don't have connections.
That's true.
Did you ever start doing more shows now that you had a record out?
Well, we started playing clubs after that. We played quite a few clubs after that. And once we got released from his contract, we ended up, Ambrose, he knew Mr. Ted Hudson. which had a record distributor called Recordtron Distributor.
Okay.
And that's how we ended up on the Zudan label.
Was that Ted Hudson's label?
Yes.
Okay. And but that didn't happen until like late 60s, early 70s, is that right?
Yes.
So, and Tilly came out like 65, so it was like 5 years before you recorded again, is that right?
True.
So what were you playing clubs that whole time?
Yes, we were.
Well, we
messed around off and on. Albert King had heard us, and we used to do stuff with him off and on. Actually, he took us on tour with him before.
Was Albert King from St. Louis?
Yes.
Okay. And you went touring with him. Where did you go?
We was all up in Idaho. We went a little bit everywhere with him.
Okay. So you were like part of his review?
Yes.
And did you have your own band?
How did you bring
the band together?
Well, when we first started, I can't think of the lady's name, but she had the song Mr. Big Stuff.
Jean Knight?
Yeah. That was the first time we sang with any, you know, professional recording artist. And the band she had couldn't do what we wanted them to do. So I don't know. I stayed upstairs, and this one guy stayed downstairs, and he played guitar. And he played for a gospel group. And I was talking to him about playing with us. Anyway, he had his brother play drums, and he had a friend play bass. So they became a part of the Earls. And wherever we went, they went. So they was like the Earls also.
So at that time, were you doing music full-time, or were you working at Chrysler and working at clubs at night? Like, how did it work?
Well, once the group formed, everybody quit their jobs. We just did music.
How many nights a week did you play?
Four.
Okay. And was there like a big scene in St. Louis at the time, like a bunch of nightclubs that you played at?
Yeah, at the time it was like, Fontella, Chuck Berry, everybody was here during that time. So, it was just, everything was booming around it during that particular time. The Dewtones, Fire Dewtones, Shake Tail Feather, all those guys were here during that time.
What were some of the clubs that you were playing at?
They had Club Highlanders. We played at the Kiel Auditorium. We was pretty much familiar with all of the disc jockeys, and they used to get us a lot of work, the disc jockeys did, because by working with the distributor, Ted Hudson, he was president of the disc jockey club here. So most all of the disc jockeys used to have us working for them. Club 54. It was quite a few clubs around there. We played mostly every club in the city and East St. Louis.
Okay, so on Zudan Records, you cut two really nice records. One was called Just an Illusion, and the other was called Does Your Mother Know? I want to play one of them, and then we could talk some more. Is that okay?
Okay.
So this is the Earls Incorporated with Just an Illusion.
Thank you.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob, and right now we are in the middle of an interview with a singer named Bobby Buchanan, who sang in a group from St. Louis called The Earls. And the record I just played was an excellent cut. And that track was called Just an Illusion, and it came out on the Zudan label, which we were just talking. And you were saying that that was run by a record distributor, a guy named Ted Hudson, is that right?
Yes.
So one thing I want to ask about is your first record was just released as The Earls, and then all your later records were released as The Earls Incorporated. When did you add the Incorporated?
Well, Joe Williams came up with that. We found out there were a few other groups called The Earls. So Joe Williams, he wanted to put the Incorporated on it to make us a little different.
Okay. And how
had a band also.
And did your band...
The band was called The Earls, too.
Did your band play on that record?
Yes. Everything we did, they played on it.
Except for the first record before you had the band, right?
Yes.
So... I never asked how you came up with the name The Earls originally.
Well, when Joe asked me, did I want to be in the group, I told him yes. And we got together. Well, he had heard me singing already. That's why he approached me. And we started interviewing other people, and I asked him, what was going to name the group? And that's what he came up with.
So Joe just came up with the name himself.
Yes.
And... the record that I just played, who sings lead on it?
Alvin Young.
Did he sing lead on almost all your records?
Most of them during the time. He was first lead, and I was second lead.
Okay. And who wrote that record?
Ty, our guitar player.
Okay. And you were telling me that Luther Ingram had something to do with that?
He was in there producing. He was helping us produce it.
So was he in the studio with you when you did it?
Yes. Yes, he, because we worked with Luther quite a bit. And when we went to the studio, he went with us. He was supposed to help us produce it, which he did.
Okay. And that record, did it get any play in St. Louis?
Yes, it did.
And the other record you had on Zudan was called Does Your Mother Know? Did that one come out? Do you remember which one came out first?
Does Mother Know come out first?
And what's the story behind that record? Who wrote it? And was this kind of like, did you record it?
The guitar player, Ty, he wrote that too.
Okay.
And Robert BQ, which was a disc jockey here at the time, he had a studio. And we went there, and that's where we recorded that at.
So, was it recorded at a different studio than Just an Illusion?
Yes.
Okay.
Just an Illusion was recorded at our Technophonic.
Okay, and that was all in St. Louis?
Yes.
So, Does Your Mother Know, was that your biggest hit in St. Louis?
Yes, it was.
And let me play the record, because it's a nice record, and we can talk some more about it.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the Earls Incorporated. And do you remember what year this came out?
No, I don't.
Was it like late 60s, early 70s sometime?
I think it was late 60s.
Okay. So this is the Earls Incorporated with Does Your Mother Know?
Really know how much I care for you.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Earls Incorporated out of St. Louis with a really nice track called Does Your Mother Know? And if you're just tuning in, I have Bobby Buchanan, singer of the Earls, telling his story. So, Bobby, who sang lead on that track?
It was me, Joe, I'm Big Bobby, Little Bobby.
Okay.
Alvin and Ambrose.
And who was singing the lead on it? Was
Alvin Young.
Okay. And that record was like your biggest record that you had, is that right?
Yes.
So did it get play anywhere besides St. Louis?
Yeah, it was like Kansas City, Memphis, Arkansas, Des Moines, quite a few other places.
And but you were telling me that some people were maybe even interested in picking up the record for, like, distribution or for on another label?
Yes. It was like a few major labels wanted to pick us up, and at the time, the management, they didn't want to go along with what the people were saying. We did, but they, you know, they had control of everything, so we couldn't do anything.
What were some of the labels that were interested in it?
Well, Mercury was interested. And at the time, Scepter was interested, and Stax was talking to us about it. And also, Jewel Record was talking to us about it.
Okay.
But us just being artists, and they were, you know, we were under contract, so we couldn't really do anything.
So you had signed contracts. Are you talking about, like, the track was under contract, or you were?
Well, we was on the Zoodan label.
Okay.
And we was on the contract to Recordtron Distributor, which was Ted Hudson.
So you,
Randy
you,
Hudson, his son.
So are you saying that you couldn't even go somewhere else to record because of the contract?
No.
Okay. How long of a contract did you sign with them?
I think it was like 4 or 5 years.
Okay. So yeah, they pretty much had you had you locked down.
Yes.
But yeah, that probably it was a really nice record. It could have been maybe a national hit if it got picked up by another label.
Yeah.
After your contract went out, did you ever try to get with those labels again?
Well, we tried. Well, we started our own label, and I think the last thing we did. Well, we did some stuff on our own label. Like I said, we knew all of the disc jockeys and whatnot here in St. Louis and a few in Kansas City and East St. Louis, places like that. And we could get airplay. And we just did that for a while. And then we had managerial problems later on. And we just didn't do anything. And, like I said, first, Alvin had a car accident, and he got killed in a car accident.
I'm sorry.
Later on, Ambrose, he died. So they left three of us. So then we brought in a guy named Michael Robinson, which he didn't work out that well. So we went back to three. And we still had, that's when we started having managerial problems. So we just didn't do anything because we couldn't under the name of the Earl. And it was a guy named Russ Lewis. I don't know if you remember the record Gene Chandler put out called That Girl, I'm Gonna Make a Mine.
Yeah, groovy situation.
Yeah, he wrote that. So he had written a song, I Gotta Make You Believe in Me. And Kent Washburn, he had just did some work with Motown. Some girls, I can't think of their name, but they had a song called You Can't Turn Me On. He had just produced them on them. He always wanted to produce the group because he's from St. Louis, too. And he had told me about the song, and I was telling him the legal problems we had. He said, well, just change the name. And that's how we ended up doing the song, I Gotta Make You Believe in Me, and changing the name to BJB because it was three B's and one J. It was Bob. My name was Bob, and the other guy's name was Bob, and Robert Pendleton's name was Bob, and Joe was Joe. So that's how we ended up naming the group BJB.
Okay, so can we back up a little bit? Because I'm confused. So the first thing you did was start your own label after Zoodan, is that right?
Yes.
And what was the label called?
T-Tie.
And that was the same label that you recorded on as your first record, is that right?
Yes.
So what happened? Did you buy the label from the other person, or he just let you use the name? Like, why did you have the same label name?
Well, he gave it to me.
Okay.
He gave it to me. I mean, we did everything legally because he didn't have any use for it anymore. Like, well, he's an older guy. And he just told me, he said, I'm going to give it to you. You do what you want to do with it.
Do you know what tea time meant? Did it mean something?
No, I don't.
Okay. So the first record you did on your own label was called What Would Your Daddy Say? Is that right?
Yes.
Was that like an answer to Does Your Mother Know?
Yes, it was.
So I'm trying to understand, at that time you still put it out on your own label as the Earls Incorporated. Were you still under contract to Zudan?
No, not at that particular time. At that particular time, we had did Does Your Mother Know, and Bull from Bull and the Matador, he wrote that particular song to be the answer to Does Your Mother Know. And we just took it and we recorded it, and we were just getting out of the contract from Recordtron Distributors, and we put it on that particular label.
So that was the first release on your own label?
Yes.
Okay, let me play it, and then we can talk a little more.
Okay.
So this is the Earls Incorporated with the first record that they released on their own label. Do you remember what year this came out? Was it early 70s?
I think that was late 60s, 69, somewhere around there, maybe 70. Maybe early 70s.
Okay, and this is called What Would Your Daddy Say? It is an answer to Does Your Mother Know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that was just the Earls Incorporated with the first record they released on their own label, T-Tie. And that was called What Would Your Daddy Say? That was an answer to the earlier record, Does Your Mother Know? And you were telling me that that record was written by Bull of Bull and the Matadors?
Yes.
Was his name James Parks? Is that his name?
Yes.
And so how did he end up writing a song for you? You just knew him and he
came
to you?
I know him from East St. Louis. And he called us one day and said, I got the answer to this song, man. I got the answer. So we say, what is it? And he brought it over. And he did a demo. And, you know, we recorded it. Well, Robbie BQ was in his studio at the time. But like I say, he was a disc jockey from when we let him hear it. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, well, this groovy. He said, yeah, let's do this. So we recorded it.
So you originally cut it as a demo?
Yes.
And then you brought it to that DJ Robert, and he heard it?
Well, what we did, once we did it as a demo, we ended up meeting a guy named Kim Tucci. And he liked it. And he ended up liking the group, so he went to his people, and we ended up going to the studio recording. We did that in another song called Let's Try It Again, which was the flip side.
Which is a pretty nice track, too.
Yeah.
So you recorded that in St. Louis?
Yes, we did.
And that other guy, was named Ken Tucci, you said?
Yeah, Kim Tucci.
He put up the money for the recording?
Yes.
How come he didn't put it on, like, put it out himself on his own label or...
Well, he didn't have one. Like I said, he was a professor in college when we was going to college, but he heard it.
Oh, okay, he was a professor.
Yeah, and he was willing to get some more people involved in doing it. He worked with the group quite a bit, you know, to get us to doing stuff. Like I said, now he knew this distributor, which was one of the big distributors in the city, Al Shelks, which was a friend of theirs, and that's who he let have the record to distribute it.
Okay, so but you also put it out on your own label. Did you form your own label before the record came out, or you formed it just to put out that record?
Well, we had it. I always had it. I had it before then.
Okay. You just couldn't do anything because you were under contract to Zudan before?
Yes.
So once the contract was out, you put out that record on your own label, and you said you distributed it with a guy named Shopes?
Al Shopes, yes.
Okay, and did it get play?
It got played here. Here in Kansas City and around Des Moines. All in the surrounding areas of here, it got played.
And were you still working a lot, 5-6 days a week?
Yeah, we used to work like anywhere from 4 to 6 days a week.
And you mentioned also to me that you had done like a TV show, is that right?
Yeah, we used to do a little show called Rampage. We would tape it, and they would play it like every Saturday, and we would be on there. We would do that. They had a couple TV shows that we used to tape and do every week.
So the shows weren't live. They actually taped them and broadcast them.
Yeah, we would tape it, and they would play them like later on.
What kind of shows were they? Were they dance shows?
They were dance shows.
And that was on local TV in St. Louis?
Yes.
Do you remember what channel it was on?
I think one was on Channel 11 and one was on Channel 30.
And did a lot of St. Louis acts come and perform in those shows?
Yeah, well, the Rampage show, that's when I first met Michael McDonald. He's the same with the Doobie Brothers?
Yeah.
That's when I first met him. He's the same with a group called The Travails.
Travels, you said?
Yes, and that's when I first met him.
So were they like a soul group?
Well, I didn't know he could sing because he would just play keyboards with them. I didn't really know he sounded what he did until later on I met him. And he was singing. I was surprised because when he was, well, we were all young during that time. And he would just play keyboards most of the time. But then later on I found out he could really sing.
Yeah, he had that big voice.
Yeah.
I have a St. Louis record by a group called the Wolfmen, and it sounds like his voice on it. You don't know anything about that, do you?
No, I don't.
So, but you met Michael on that TV show, and he performed on that show before the Doobie Brothers?
Yes.
And did the other local groups that you used to compete against perform too?
No. We were them, the Travails, and the Earl. We were the only two that would be on there.
So you'd be there like every week on the show?
Yeah, they would ask us to come back every week.
So what would you would do different songs, or like what would you do on the show?
Well, we would do a different show. Like during that time, we were pretty much the most popular group in the city.
Okay.
And people would always be asking us to come and do stuff like, PBS, Channel 9, to TV station. They used to always ask to come do stuff for them to raise money. We would do a lot of charitable stuff, too.
Okay. But that Rampage show specifically, it was a dance show, is that right?
Yes.
So, like, would kids come and dance or, like, adults? Like, what was it like?
Mostly kids. It was similar to something like Soul Train.
Okay. But they didn't have different acts. It was just you and a couple of
others. Well, we would come every week, and they would have, the Travails. I don't remember anybody else coming.
Okay. That's cool, though. It'd be cool to see some of those tapes if they still exist. So you put out that record, What Would Your Daddy Say, and it got some play. And you put out one more record on the T-Tie label as the Earls Incorporated. It was Everybody's Got Somebody and Someday Baby. What's the story with that record?
Well, me, Joe, and the other Bobby, we just decided we had tried other people in the group and it didn't work. And like I say, we talked to Oliver Sane and he told us we could come and use the studio. And we used his band and we just went over one day and that's how that come about.
So that wasn't recorded with your band, it was recorded with Oliver Sane's band?
Yeah, with Oliver Sane's band.
But it's the same five members on that record?
It was just three of us.
On the Earls record, Everybody's Got Somebody?
Yes.
So who are the three members on that?
Myself, Bobby Chambers, Joe Williams.
Okay. Like you said, one of the members passed away?
Yes.
And
we had brought a guy in, Michael Robson, but he didn't work, so we started working with three.
Okay. Well, let me play this record, and then we can talk some more about what happened after that.
Okay.
So this is the final record released under the name The Earls. This track is called Everybody's Got Somebody.
Everybody, 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 ever
Okay, that was just the Earls Incorporated with their last record that they released under the name The Earls. That was called Everybody's Got Somebody. And that was released on their own Tea Tie label out of St. Louis. So that record, did it come out like soon after, like immediately after What Would Your Daddy Say? Or when did it come out?
It was a little later on. We just worked. And then finally, like I say, we met this gentleman. And I don't know, me, Joe, and Bob, we were sitting around, and we just figured we needed a record to try to, you know, I mean, in order to work, you got to have something out there during that particular time. So we went in the studio, we talked to Oliver, and he said, sure, come on over. So we went over, and the guys, members of this band, they was willing to work with us. So that's how we ended up doing it.
So you're talking about Oliver Sane's band?
Yes.
So your own band, did they break up at that point or something?
No, they were still around.
Why didn't you record it with your own band?
I guess because, well, like I said, we had talked to Oliver, and that was one of the conditions, that we use as musicians.
Okay.
Because he didn't really charge us that much for the use of the studio. He was a pretty nice guy. He would let you come in when he wasn't doing anything sometimes and, you know, do something, do some recording or whatever. And the guys would be sitting around, and they was always willing to help because everybody was trying to make it back during that particular time.
And so who sings lead on that record?
That was Joe Williams.
Okay. And then there's just two people on backup?
Yeah, me and Bobby Chambers.
Okay. And can you repeat? I know you mentioned this already, but what happened to the other two members of the group?
Well, Alvin Young died in a car accident, and Ambrose, he just died.
Okay. So, did it ruin your, like, work a lot, too, that you had lost two members? Or did you keep working?
We still worked, but we didn't work as much. Because, I mean, you know, once you lose some parts of your ingredients, it's not really the same as it was before. So, And then I've always been a fan of the impression of Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
So that's, I was able to incorporate a lot of things with three people because I've always been a tight, I've always been interested in sound, you know, harmony and stuff. And when Ambrose, me and Ambrose used to do all of the arrangements and stuff in the group. So I was able to get things together where we could do stuff as three.
So you were continuing to work with just three, and you said you did like impression
yes.
style harmony.
Yes.
So that record, did it get any play? Everybody's Got Somebody.
Yeah, well, locally it did.
Okay.
We did have some locally.
So your final record you were saying before got recorded under the name BJB. How much later was that?
That was like in the mid or late 70s. It was the mid or the late 70s.
And you said that you had to change your name to BJB because someone else owned the name at that point?
No, nobody. Well, I guess we was in a contract with management. And like I say, we was trying to get with a major label again at that particular time. They didn't like the terms of the agreement from the major label, and they wouldn't, you know, let us go. So we just didn't do anything. And like I said, I knew Russ and I knew Kent. And Russ had wrote this particular song, and he said it would fit the group. And I was explaining the situation, and they came and they said, well, just use another name. And that's how we come up with BJB.
So who?
And we had met Robert Pendleton at the same time. And with Joe knowing him, I didn't know him. Joe introduced me to him. When I heard him, I said, oh, wow, he's a natural. So, we went in the studio and we recorded it.
So, who were the members of BJB?
The other Bobby, myself, Joe Williams, and Robert Pendleton.
So, there's actually four people on it?
Yes.
Okay. So, but BJB stood for Bob, Joe, Bob?
Well, it was three Bobs and one Joe.
Why weren't you BJBB? You have four people.
Ken Washburn come up with the name. He said three Bobs, one Joe. He said BJB, and that's what we went with.
Okay. So I'm going to play the record. This is the last record that you released under the name BJB. This track is called I Gotta Make You Believe in Me. Here it is. Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That track was just the last record that the Earls Incorporated released under the name BJB with I Gotta Make You Believe in Me. And if you're just tuning in, I have a longtime member of the Earls, Bobby Buchanan, telling his story. So that record, you said it came out like mid-70s, like disco era?
Yes.
And even though it doesn't sound disco, I guess one way it's kind of disco influence is that it's a longer track.
Yes,
noticed
it is.
It's like over 4 minutes.
Yes.
So that record, did that get any play in St. Louis?
It's got quite a bit of play in St. Louis. Matter of fact, a few companies wanted to pick it up.
What companies were interested in it?
Jewel was interested in it, and I don't know if you're familiar with 101 Strings. What's the other company? It's a company in Nashville. Millie Jackson and Joe Simon was on the label.
Was it Spring?
That might have been it. They was interested. It was about four companies interested in it.
Okay. But why couldn't they pick it up? It was more management issues or contract issues again?
Yes.
And who were the four? You said this already, but who were the four singers on that again?
Robert Pendleton, myself, Bobby Buchanan, Bobby Chambers, and Joe Williams.
And Robert Pendleton sang lead, is that right?
Yes.
So did you continue to work? What did you do after that?
Well, Robert Pendleton, he had medical problems, so he had to lead a group. So myself, Joe, and Bobby, we kept performing up until 02. And then Joe, he died.
Sorry to hear that.
We haven't done anything since then. We have been trying to find somebody, at least one other person, but it's been difficult.
So there's only two members left of the group?
Yes.
And you said you continued performing until 2002. Like, what kind of places were you performing?
Well, we did clubs, the colleges, and stuff like that.
So, like, are there still clubs to perform at in St. Louis?
Sure.
Okay. And what, like, were the last college kind of act college gigs that you did? Where was that?
Well, the last one we did was Missouri University of St. Louis.
Was that in the 90s?
No, that was in I think last time we did something was like, it was 2000. It was 2002, right before Joe got sick.
And, like, what did you do at the college then? Like, what kind of stuff did you sing?
R&B.
Like, did you sing just, like, whatever was out at the time, or?
Well, we did some old Temptations. We would mix it up. We did some old Temptations. We might do some Freddie Jackson. Just depends.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I've always been the type of person. I was taught. You had to find out what type of crowds you had.
Yeah.
And then you give them what you think they might want to hear. So that was pretty much my thing. And I was always able to tell what type of crowd it was and what we should do for the particular crowd.
Yeah, like the only reason I was asking was because, like, I imagine younger college students don't know a lot about, like, 70s music anymore.
I don't know. You'd be surprised.
Okay.
You would be surprised. You hear a lot of young people now saying, you know, old school. It depends on what you give them. A lot of times you can give them something that they can relate to. Because, I mean, you know, Bob's been an older group. I used to pick, like, not a lot of ballads, but, you know, something like maybe Ooh, Baby, Baby by the Miracles or something like that. That would always go over.
Yeah, that's awesome that you were able to, like, maintain a college audience even into the 2000s.
Yeah.
So did you ever record again after that BJB record was released?
We did. We had started doing some tracks with Oliver, but in the process, Oliver, he ended up passing. So.
But you actually finished recording a few more tracks?
Yes.
But they never got released because of Oliver passed?
Yes. Actually, we did four.
Well,
after he passed, that was pretty much it. I tried to get out to the masters, which I was unable to do because his wife had charge of everything.
Yeah, that's too bad. It'd be great to hear the rest of the material that you had recorded.
Yes, I would like to get it too. It was pretty good, I thought.
But, sorry. Well, either way, you definitely have sort of a unique story in that You're probably one of the only people I've talked to whose group stayed together for so long and continued performing and working for so long.
Well, thanks.
So you were lucky to have that, at least. even if you never had a national hit, you had your group together and were still working as a group for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what I always wanted to do. Well, really, all of us did. Like I say, matter of fact, I just talked to the other Bobby today. And we were talking about still trying to find a third person. But that's, I don't know, it's hard nowadays.
Yeah, not a lot of people know how to sing harmony anymore, even.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, like I say, if we do, we'll start something again. But if not, I mean, you know. But me and him, we get together and mess around quite often. And we do a little writing and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I hope something else comes out from you eventually.
Okay, thanks.
So, first of all, I have to say thanks so much for taking the time to tell your story and give us a piece also of kind of St. Louis music history. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Do you have any last words for the listening audience?
No more than I'm grateful to the ride that I had back during that particular time, and I'm grateful to the people that supported us during that time. I guess that's about it. I had a great time. I really did. I enjoyed my life. As far as the music part, I got to meet a lot of great people, and I still talk to a lot of people that I met back during that particular time, and it was just nice, and it still is, really. I mean, I go to California, different places all the time, from people I met and hang out with people that I met from back during that particular time, which, like I say, it was a beautiful time in my life.
Yeah, that's great that you were able to experience all those things.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks again. And this final track that I'm going to play is the flip side of What Would Your Daddy Say? This track is called Let's Try It Again.
Let's try it again.